Why don't we start with the complexity right now, since we're talking
about
that.
Since we're there? Okay.
Okay.
All right. So, I wrote this book. The book is a little history of sort of how I got into this and how and why I wrote what I wrote. I've been in music therapy a very, very long time. We were celebrating our 60th anniversary at our last conference, and they asked us to figure out how long we've been a music therapist, and I realized I have actually been a music therapist for 37 years. Most of that as a teacher of music therapy, not all of it, but most of it. And at some various points in my career, I have gotten discouraged about music or music therapy. And I think anybody who's thinking about what they do has these points of crisis of confidence or something like that. And I was increasingly frustrated because we kept being told that we wouldn't be accepted as a profession because we didn't have any proof, any research. And myself and all my colleagues were doing this research, but we just didn't get the results. We'd see something happen in a session, say with Alzheimer's patients, who we're going to talk about later. We see it happen, where they suddenly become more alert and, they sing the songs and all the things that can happen. And we'd set up a reductionistic standard research project, like is acceptable. And we would run the study, but we'd have to limit it to one factor, because that's what you do in that kind of research, say the rhythm or the tonality or the mode or whatever it was, and then we didn't see anything. Nothing happened. And either I was hallucinating or I was kidding myself, or this tool wasn't working for what I was trying to show. So I began an exploration of, could I find a science? And I was actually very intent on finding a science, because in the mystical literature, in the ancient literature, there's lots of explanations and lots of things that we're now even, quote-unquote, proving with modern science. But that also is not looked on as an acceptable validation of what we do. And some of you may already have been running into that as you begin to talk about bedside harp and therapeutic harp and that sort of thing. So I began to look for science, and I became a member of the International Society for the Study of Subtle Energy and Energy Medicine. And at one of those conferences was introduced to complexity science, and I began to read about complexity science. And I began to read about complexity science and physical functioning, and to some extent about music and complexity science, although not very much. And I got excited again, and I got excited again about the profession and what it could do. So out of that, if 9 years of research and writing, the book that you are reading emerged. And really, it is two things. It is a summary of all the areas of practice in music therapy, with a review of some of the literature that it does exist, and it is also a book to set forward a new theory, a new philosophy, philosophical basis for what we do in music therapy based on complexity science. So that's what I was doing, was putting together a physics science with music therapy specifically. I do mention some of the sound healing disciplines in the book, but I am focused primarily on music therapy. And I was not too far a stretch, because you studied out by looking at the tapes, you had a little review of some acoustical principles, and acoustics is the science of sound. Acoustics is the physics of sound. So we already looked to physics to explain some of the basic mechanisms of how sound is produced and transmitted, and how loudness grows, and all the things that I very quickly reviewed on those tapes for you. So to take another physics theory and look at it and apply it to music therapy didn't seem terribly far-fetched to me. So the first thing I had to do was remind myself that music is an energy. and look at the energy characteristics of music, because it's based on vibration, and vibration is movement. And all the various aspects of that movement, how fast it moves is the pitch, how big it moves is the amplitude, how many overtones there are, and in what arrangement is timbre. It's all mechanical energy. It's pure Newtonian mechanical energy. You know, if you pluck a string, it's going to, between elasticity and momentum, it's going to vibrate back and forth over a point of rest until friction takes the energy away and the sound finally dies. Most of our ear mechanism is mechanical energy. I mean, this is large or gross movement, and it is, however, movement. What is also really cool, I think, about the ear is not only does it transmit sound pressure changes that are the acoustic wave into this mechanical energy of the eardrum and the three bones of the middle ear, and it sets the fluid in the inner ear into vibration, but through the action of the basilar membrane and the organ of Corti, it literally changes energy. It's a transducer of energy. And so many science fiction stories and movies and things are based on we're going to transduce the energy. And our ear does it 24/7 and throughout our lives, changes all this mechanical energy into electrochemical impulses that is the neuron firing. And what they are finding, as I said, with the heart, is that all these physical processes have these characteristics of complex systems, the nonlinear transmission patterns. In fact, the nerve doesn't just transmit a signal like electricity running through a line. It actually jumps through points on the cell, nodules on the cell in nonlinear fashions to increase the speed and the strength of the transmission so that it is far greater by the time it leaves the hair cells in the organ of Corti and arrives in the brain. It's far bigger, far more impactful. So we are finding that we live in an extremely complex world, and that it is that complex world that we recognize as real, which is, again, why that metronomic rhythmic changes seems artificial and kind of boring and not very emotional, because that's not how our world is. Our world in every aspect is messy, lumpy, and irregular. It really doesn't fit into neat patterns. It really doesn't develop in easy, simple 1 + 1 = 2 kinds of measurements. You know, in complex systems, small things can make a big impact, a huge impact. And when systems are in motion and they're evolving over time, they have to be addressed in their wholeness. You can't cut them apart. And you can start at the same place in an evolving system, but it will never progress through time the same ever. The old adage, you never step in the same river twice, is truly true, because the patterns of the movement will vary slightly if the flow has gone down or if a tree has fallen in the creek you're stepping in. You never know what all the little factors are that could be impacting the big system. And so I use the example at the head of my chapter on complexity science, that a hurricane is a perfect example of what they call dynamical system in motion, a big system moving in time, in that they've gotten better at it, but they can't absolutely predict ever where a hurricane will actually pinpoint land, because there are too many variables out there in the big ocean that could change the speed, the direction, even slightly. And because whole systems add in again the changes, this is the iterative or compound feedback, little things can build up and build up and build up and completely shift a big system like a hurricane. So the best they can do is that pie-shaped thing we see in the coast of Florida. They do the best they can with wind speed and air temperature and water temperature and land and whatever all they're looking at, but there's always some missing variable. So you have to look at the system as a whole and as unique and as unpredictable. Again, because you can never know exactly what's going to impact. It may go in directions you have no idea it's going to go in. So our current science, and this is the case I made, in several places in the book, that our current science, though, has given us an amazing amount of knowledge, information, you know, over the last 400 years. I'm not saying dump reductionistic research at all. We have certainly, we have a second iPad. I mean, think how fast things are changing. And a lot of that is based on this good basic science model that essentially Galileo established. But it is based on this idea of reductionism or reducing something to a simple variable, the fact that you can replicate a piece of research, which according to complexity science is absolutely impossible. It says that if you figure out a system, you can control it. That hasn't worked with weather as far as I can tell, and it really doesn't work with other systems. Our current science says that we can do a research project and be objective. We can leave out our own opinions, our own emotions, our own whatever, so doctors feel they can cure a patient just with their knowledge and not get emotionally involved. And I'm probably going to guess that all 50 of you would disagree with that, that you're in a therapeutic music healing endeavor because you know that contact through the music, you can't be objective. You have to care. You have to believe they'll get better or at least come to a place of resolution. And so it's the big fallacy of our current science that scientists can be objective and leave themselves out of the research project. It's absolutely not true. And it believes in linear development, that everything is ordered and neat and nothing interferes with that. And when it does, they just throw it out. Oh, well, we're just going to ignore that. And that's why all the psi research, all the research on, you know, psychic phenomenon has never really reached the kind of level of research that it really deserves because it's too messy and it doesn't fit in the linear patterns and they just say, oh, we have to ignore this. So, again, it doesn't really help us totally figure out what our world is like. Also, understand I did not create complexity science. I'm borrowing it. I'm using it. Some very, very, very smart physicists really developed this science in the early 70s. So I'm just applying it in one particular area here in music healing and music therapy. So as I said, the assumptions of complexity science are quite different than the assumptions of our current science. So they acknowledge that the world is messy and irregular, that real processes in nature are dynamical, meaning they evolve and change in time, where each successive state is a function of the preceding one. It builds up. And one of the best people who writes about this idea is Ken Wilber in his book, A Brief History of Everything. He talks about nested systems, and it's a very good overview of that. In complexity science, wholeness is implied. So when you're trying to study, say, a therapeutic harp intervention, you can't take the harpist out of it. You can't take the person out of it because that would damage the whole. I mean, that would interrupt the whole of that process. And that's why, you know, when you're doing research and you have to use the same music so you use a recording, the minute you use a recording, irregardless of digital or whatever, by taking the harpist out of it, you've changed it. You've changed the wholeness of it, and therefore the research will never reflect what you're getting with a live therapist playing that music. And we also know in the world is unpredictable. Don't we all live there? the idea that these systems in motion are sensitive to initial conditions, nonlinear, where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, which is really a definition of nonlinear. and that we actually are seeing this movement as highly complex information, quote unquote, where movement is based on the function of how things interact. And isn't that what we do in music therapy and harp therapy and therapeutic bedside playing? Isn't it about the interaction of the patient, the music, you playing the music, you changing the music when you notice that they need something else or that you've gotten the wrong mode or the wrong resonant tone and you change it? It's about that relationship between you and the music, the client and you, and the patient, we say client, and the patient and the music. How do you break up that relationship?